welcome to another edition of Awesomania. It's me, it's Mike, and I'm being joined by Mr. Fatimus Prime himself, Matt Carroll. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. How are you, buddy?
Doing all right.
Surviving this this old-fashioned gully washer we got coming.
Oh yeah. I'm surviving it okay. I actually had to drive in this tropical storm like 2 days in a row. And luckily, no car accidents for me, but there were a lot of accidents on 270. So,
yeah.
But speaking of accidents, when we did our last episode, obviously we can't do Peacock because Peacock is now not letting you share screen and all this other stuff. It's really stupid. Poor unused Peacock. But so we were scrambling. We were trying to like do for Daily Motion. That didn't work out for us. We're trying to do for like YouTube. That works a little better, but with ads. So I forgot to put in the article, the links to the videos, so you can follow along with us. So in this episode, you'll notice that we've provided you with the link to the YouTube for the Fall Brawl War Games match we'll watch in a bit, and we'll talk more about that later, and for the main event of WWF Breakdown in Your House, which again, we'll discuss in a little bit. So oops, but also at the same time, if you have Peacock, you're able to at least, you know, pull up those matches on there. Just note, when you do YouTube and it's off the WWE channel, you don't get entrances. Just something to keep in mind. But when we finished recording, a few hours later, some major news came out, and that was the fact that AEW had fired CM Punk. So as you saw, when the episode came out, we talked about the suspension and what could potentially happen. And then there's a tweet in the post saying, oh, CM Punk's been fired. We're going to talk about that real quick right now. So Matt, CM Punk's been fired by AEW.
I mean, good. I mean, I'm not the biggest AEW fan, so to me, it doesn't matter either way. But I mean, I've been thinking a little bit more about this the other day, and or since the last time, and I think I might have said it the last time, I don't know, but you've got people there who aren't acting the right way, so part of me understands why CM Punk freaked out. For example, you've got EVPs who aren't conducting themselves like EVPs.
Yep.
You've got a guy who, and I know I said this last time, you got the CEO or the president or whatever the hell he is, who wanted to start a wrestling company to hang out with his friends. It feels to me more like than to run a wrestling company. You know what I mean? And he's basically let the inmates kind of run the asylum there. And again, to me, it's just WCW 2.0.
Yeah, and here's the thing, like, you know, obviously, you know, if you read the statement, it said that, you know, CM Punk was fired with cause, and that some of the reports were saying that Tony Khan was fearing for his life. And, you know, Samoa Joe recently spoke about it, because obviously the opening match of All In at Wembley was CM Punk versus Samoa Joe. And Samoa Joe goes, it's like, It was not as intense as everyone was making it out to be. I mean, I can understand why certain people would feel a certain way because they're not from this environment, i.e. Tony Khan. But like Samoa Joe's thing was like, I just stepped up because it's bell time and we need to get this show rolling. So, and honestly, Samoa Joe brings a lot of credibility to when he says things.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of take what Samoa Joe says more at heart than what a Dave Meltzer will say or a Brian Alvarez, especially the fact that Samoa Joe was there. So,
yeah.
But I'm going to just say this. I'm kind of glad that, you know, I'm disappointed in how Punk's run ended in AEW. I wish he could have had a more fleshed out run in the company. Obviously, it was marred by injury, suspension, with an injury at the same time, and then this. But I'm also kind of glad that he's out of AEW at the same time, too, because you could tell that that environment was not the right environment for CM Punk, because CM Punk has a very strong personality. And I know that this has been mentioned on some other stuff, but CM Punk has a very strong personality, and you need to have a strong personality in return to kind of keep things in check. And in WWE, you have Vince, or you had, or have had Vince McMahon and now Triple H, who are strong personalities who won't take that type of crap and won't tolerate it. And then you have Tony Khan, who is a little bit more laid back. And I forget who said it. I think it might have been Al Snow. And Al Snow is another guy you listen to because he's a guy who knows what he's talking about. And Al Snow is like, Tony Khan is the type of guy who cares more about wanting to be liked than respected. Whereas Vince McMahon doesn't care if you like him, but you're going to respect him, you know, when he's running things. And same with Triple H. He doesn't care if you like him, but you're going to respect him. You know, and I think that's, you need that type of, type of leadership when you have a guy like CM Punk. You need somebody who's going to be able to put their foot down and say, no, this isn't how we act here, you know, and stuff like that, or, you know, whatever. And at the same time, not let the inmates run the asylum.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, like I said, when you have EVPs who aren't acting like EVPs, it's a bad. Like, I heard something about, I don't know whether this was ever confirmed or not, but I had heard that there was supposed to be a sit-down between Punk, the Bucks, and Kenny, and at the last minute, Punk, or the Bucks and Kenny...
Well, it doesn't sound like... So I know what you're talking about. There was supposed to be a meeting right before All In, and it wasn't Kenny that nixed it. Apparently, it was the Bucks that nixed it. But more came out afterwards, after the fact. And apparently the thing was, is that the Bucks were willing to sit down and do the meeting with Punk, but they weren't willing to do it until after Punk can prove after 6 months that he wouldn't have an incident. And it's like,
I mean, that's fine, but you still got to have that. You still got to have a meeting, though. I mean, you can have the first meeting to start trimming things over, and then 6 months later, you can have that final meeting after he's quote-unquote proven himself. But, you know, I mean, I don't know.
I think that's problematic. And I said it last time, too. The last time when we talked about it, you know, I mentioned, you know, the moment you get lawyers involved, it just creates even more issues than there really should be. And that's kind of the problem that we really kind of got faced with, is the fact that you have these, you know, the moment these, like, all the Brawl Out happened, lawyers got involved immediately, investigations took place. And it's like, I think when that happened, it just devolved everything. Because you just instantly went and hid behind something as a shield, per se. And again, in WWE, you know, and I brought this up on the last episode, when Batista and Booker T had their backstage fight, Vince was like, all right, we're going to take this out and we're going to put it in the ring and you're going to make money. And you're going to settle this out in the ring. Matt Hardy and Edge. You know, it's like, yeah, it's like when you have these issues, you have to actually solve the issues. I mean, when the thing with Booker T and Batista happened, there was no investigation. Nobody got suspended. It was just like, go out in the ring and settle this out there. And end up being like a good like 4 or 5 month feud between the two. You know, so it's like, and that's kind of also the problem that, you know, you set this precedent in your backstage area that when an incident happens, oh, well, we're just going to run an investigation and then lawyers are going to get involved. It creates more problems. Yeah. You know, it creates more problems than what you should already need to have. It's like, all right, two guys got at it. Go settle it in the ring. Just go settle it. You know, make us some money at the same time. And I think that's the problem with the Bucks. I think when Punk came back initially from the suspension slash injury, because both happened at the same time for him, they needed to have that meeting before he even returned to television. That's what they should have done. Before he returned to television, they should have had a meeting, period. And then if you want, like you said, if you want to have another meeting 6 months later, go for it. But it should have happened right away. And I think is what set a lot of the issues in motion as well when Punk came back. Because, yeah, I could see why CM Punk could say he felt I could see how Punk maybe felt disrespected and frustrated by a lot of things, by what was going on backstage. And that's why I say, you know, I'm disappointed, because I like the run that Punk was having in AEW when healthy and not suspended. But at the same time, I'm also happy for Punk at the same time too, because he's now out of a situation that he really doesn't need to be in. And who knows? He mentioned on CFCC commentary like a weekend ago, he's got 2 months to kill. And what's in 2 months in Chicago?
The Royal Rumble?
That's January, dude. 2 months is November.
Survivor Series?
Yep. Survivor Series is going to be at Chicago. And Punk said 2 months, which means he will probably be a free agent come 2 months. Whether or not he comes back to WWE, that remains to be seen. But we'll find out. So, but moving on from Punk, since we just segued into WWE, this was the perfect segue. The WWE UFC merger into TKO has officially finalized. With that, unfortunately, when it came to the WWE office, there were over 100 layoffs done. Now, the manner of which the layoffs were done in could be questionable, because it was done under Nick Khan. Obviously, these layoffs were going to happen because that's what happens when these mergers take place. I know, Matt, you would know because you witnessed me experiencing it twice in like a 3 year span for myself.
Yeah.
So I completely understand what it's like when two companies come together and merge. Actually, technically, I've experienced it 3 times, but I wasn't let go the first time because that was when GameStop bought EB Games. But I was actually spared on that one. It was more managers and stuff. It wasn't like the lower level, like key holders or game advisors. Like, I wasn't affected in that, but I was affected in the one when Orthodontic Store got purchased by Young Innovations and when Shift 4 bought Merchant Link. So I was let go on both of those mergers. So I understand it. And so I feel awful for those people. And I also feel awful for the people who got held on, because the way the layoffs were done was done in a very unorthodox and very uncomfortable way. I mean, that's never comfortable, being laid off, but still, you know, making everyone be remote for the layoffs and stuff like that and not having anyone in the office, I think that wasn't the right thing to do. But that's just me personally, because I think people should be able to see others and, you know, be able to give a proper goodbye. You know, that's just me, but, you know, they did it the way they did it. And then there were talent releases that took place these last couple days. Some notable names was obviously Mason Mansoor from Maxim Male Models. Dolph Ziggler was let go. Mustafa Ali was let go. That one was the biggest one, in my opinion. I know Dolph Ziggler got a lot of praise online when he was let go, but Ali was actually actively in a feud. What was that?
Did you see what Booker T said about that?
No, not yet, but I want to say this about Ali. Ali is the biggest one to me because he was actively in a feud for the NXT North American title with Dominic Mysterio on NXT. So Ali's release was the more shocking of them all. Rick Boogs was let go. Dana Brooke was let go. Matt Riddle was released on Friday, which reading about his, he just kind of burned through all of his chances. So it was kind of like one of those things, it's time to let him go because he's burned through every chance and opportunity he's had, and he's brought a lot of controversy with him, with his personal life. So, you know, but you were going to say something. What did Booker T say?
So Booker T, they asked him about the Dolph Ziggler thing, and he said, while Dolph was one of the best workers in the company, probably, he said that, in his opinion, Dolph had become complacent over the last 10 years and just kind of, he feels like just decided that he was going to go along for the ride. Like, he didn't really do anything character-wise or anything like that to change his situation. He just kind of rolled with it. And Booker T was like, it was just kind of time to let him go.
Yep. And it should also be noted that a lot of these talent releases began after it was announced that SmackDown would be moving back to USA Network in October of 2024 on a 5-year contract, which is going to be worth about $1.4 billion. So a lot of people were like, and it sounds like Raw and NXT will not be staying on USA Network. And that potentially, and this is what Meltzer thinks there's a very good chance that one of Raw, SmackDown, or NXT will be put on Wednesday night to oppose AEW Dynamite.
Really?
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't see how you move Monday night. I don't see how you move Raws off of Monday nights.
Well, yeah.
And that is a staple of everything.
Here's my thing, right? Like, we've already had the Monday Night Wars. We don't need the Wednesday Night Wars. We don't need the Friday Night Wars. Just, like, there's enough days in the week where everybody can have their slice of the pie, right? So AEW should get its two. Like, AEW should take Tuesdays and Thursdays and let WWE have Monday, Wednesday, Friday for their shows. And then on the weekends, you guys can have your pay-per-views, but nobody needs to compete with each other on those nights. It's dumb. Just have your night where you get all the ratings and let it be.
Well, here's the thing. You have Raw and SmackDown be Monday and Friday, respectively. You have NXT be Tuesday, which it has been for, I think, like 2 years now at this point. You keep Dynamite on Wednesday. You keep Collision on Saturday. And you keep Rampage on Friday, because the thing is, Rampage is immediately after SmackDown. It's never the same time as SmackDown. They keep it on purpose afterwards.
Well, there you go. See, that's so how, like, they should just keep it. Don't compete with each other. Just keep your time slots where they are, and just everybody, there's enough money and enough time and enough days in the week for everybody to get their slice of the pie.
Well, and not only that, but here's the thing. Impact Wrestling is Thursday nights. So, yeah.
Just let everybody eat. It's fine. Everybody can have their own slice. Just let everybody eat.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the full list. I have the full list somewhere. Yeah, there's a bunch of NXT guys let go. Here it is. Full list. So just so that way everyone knows, the full list of releases that were done talent wise was Mustafa Ali, Emma, Elias, Top Dollar, Rick Boogs, Riddick Moss, Aaliyah, Shelton Benjamin, Dolph Ziggler, Mace, Mansoor, Dana Brooke, Dabba Kato, Shanky, and now I'm going to go into some names you haven't heard because they're all like NXT people. Quincy Elliott, Bryson Montana, Ulyssa Leon, Daniel MacArthur, Kevin Ventura Cortez, Alexis Gray, Brooklyn Barlow, and Ikemen Jiro. That's the full list of who was let go. Like, obviously, Emma wasn't wrestling. Elias was pitching creative up to like a month ago and was getting turned down. Top Dollar sucks. I'm sorry. I don't see what anyone sees in him. He's not good. I wish him the best. Like all of them, I wish him the best, but I'm just giving my honest opinion. I was not a fan of Top Dollar. I did not see any value in Top Dollar. And I think Ashanti Theodonis and B-Fab, especially with B-Fab in a manager role, is going to be a lot. Those two are going to be better off without him. And the fact that Top Dollar came out and said that, oh, Hit Row is now dead without me because of his release. No, Hit Row died when you guys came back and you didn't come back with Swerve Strickland. Because Swerve is killing it in AEW right now. Rick Boogs, which is weird because Rick Boogs is in like that Snickers commercial right now. So it makes it even more awkward for him. Riddick Moss wasn't really being used. Aaliyah hasn't wrestled in over a year. Shelton Benjamin was kind of working main event. Dolph Ziggler. I mean, yeah, I could see the Booker T thing with complacency because he puts out great matches, but he wasn't going any further. And I think it was because management didn't really want to use him any further at the same time. Mason Mansoor, I think we're trying to work on a repackage. Dana Brooke was working NXT. Dava Kato had just returned the NXT. Shanky just did the big show in India. And then, like I said, the rest were all NXT people. And then Ali, like I said, was working the feud with Dominic Mysterio for the NXT North American title. And he was actually supposed to be in the triple threat at NXT No Mercy coming up. So that's just kind of a rundown on that. And then also Elimination Chamber is going to be taking place in Perth, Australia, which means it'll be airing live for us on Peacock at 6 a.m.
when is that?
That's going to be February.
Okay.
Yeah, that is, that's going to be a while. So yeah, that's that. And then also last thing on the news end of things, there's a report through Axio that TKO admits that Vince McMahon could be a major liability to its business. You think? It's like, you think? So apparently, and Matt, you can see the article because I'm sharing the screen with you. In the thing, it's actually noted that McMahon currently holds around 28.84 million TKO shares, which is valued at $3 billion, or around $3 billion. Furthermore, TKO has registered all of McMahon's shares for sale, thus enabling him to avoid the lockup period that applies to other TKO shareholders like Endeavor and Silver Lake. The report says this registration rights agreement outlined by TKO might just be about giving McMahon and or TKO flexibility in light of the ongoing federal investigation into McMahon's alleged misconduct that was widely reported on last summer related to hush money payments and certain unrecorded expenses made by McMahon. Axio also mentions that in another regulatory filing, TKO admitted McMahon is a potential liability to their business, and I quote, McMahon's membership on our board could expose us to negative publicity and or have other adverse financial and operational impacts on our business. His membership also may result in additional scrutiny or otherwise exacerbate the other risks described herein. Any of these outcomes could directly or indirectly have adverse financial and operational impacts on our business. And I think everyone in the entire wrestling world goes, yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
So,
they do need to like get Vince out of there. That's for sure, 100%.
Yeah. So, with that, Matt, we are going to start. That's enough news. That's enough notes. We're going to start with our watchovers. But first, what we're going to do is, Matt, you're going to talk about Fall Brawl. We're going to do this a little different. We're going to have you go over the Fall Brawl card minus the main event.
Okay.
So don't tell everyone what the main event is. So just real quick, just let us know about the first 8 matches of WCW Fall Brawl 98 War Games. And note, before Matt starts, there was no ECW pay-per-view in September, so we're not going to be discussing ECW. Matt, take it away, because I talk too much anyways.
All right, so We've got this is a hell of a card again. Way to go, WCW! Put on a great show, and that was all sarcasm for everyone wondering. So the first match was the British Bulldog and Jim Neidhart versus the Dancing Fool of Alex Wright and the Disco Inferno in an 11-minute 3-second tag team match in which Bulldog and Neidhart won. Yikes! Then we have Chris Jericho in a singles match for the WCW World Television Championship against a Goldberg impersonator.
Yeah, buddy, that's the match of the night. Match of the night right there, buddy.
And Jericho won in 1 minute and 15 seconds by submission. Jesus Christ. And then we have match number three. It's just a regular singles match between Ernest the Cat Miller and Norman Smiley at 5 minutes and 4 seconds, with Ernest Miller taking home the victory. Then we have a singles match in which was Scott Steiner versus Rick Steiner. And that ended in a no contest, and the stipulation was, had Scott Steiner refused to wrestle his brother, even by way of a forfeit or a no-show, he would have been permanently banned from WCW. Yikes. Juventud Guerrero defeated the Silver King in 8 minutes and 36 seconds in the WCW Cruiserweight Championship match. Now, this match, I think, actually, I probably might have liked these next two, at least. Perry Saturn versus defeats Raven with Canyon and Lodi in a Raven's Rules match in 14 minutes and 4 seconds, the second longest match of the night. I remember those Raven's Rules being pretty cool. Raven and Perry Saturn were both pretty good workers. Probably was an entertaining match at the least.
Yep.
Then match number seven, we have, which I think probably would have been my top match of the night. You have Dean Malenko defeating Kurt Hennig with Rick Rude by disqualification in a singles match in 7 minutes and 38 seconds. So we all know that Kurt Hennig, to me, is one of the top five greatest wrestlers of all time. And I think a lot of people would agree with that. So you put him and Dean Malenko, who's also an incredible worker, in the ring together, they probably tore the house down. I imagine. And then in the eighth match of the night, second to the main event, we have Conan defeating Scott Hall with Vincent by submission in a singles match in 12 minutes and 3 seconds. And I can tell you that match was probably 12 minutes and 3 seconds too long.
So real quick, obviously I mentioned the Jericho Goldberg impersonator being the match of the night. Obviously that was sarcasm, but that storyline though was pretty good.
The storyline was great, but and the match, well, I do remember that match. The match was not good, but it was funny because if I remember correctly, Jericho was acting as if he did beat the real Goldberg.
Yeah.
After that for weeks and, you know, rubbing it in Goldberg's face. And that match continued a very good storyline.
Yeah. And it's just unfortunate that Goldberg wouldn't play ball and actually have a legitimate match with Chris Jericho until like years later in WWE.
Which is funny because when you watch the Death of WCW paper or DVD, the Rise and Fall of WCW or whatever it was, Goldberg says in that DVD that he would stand at the curtain and watch the cruiserweight matches because he thought the cruiserweight matches were great. And then you get the chance to work with a cruiserweight who you could have done a lot of great stuff with, who would have made you look like even more of a $1 million because he would have bumped his ass off for you, and you refuse to work with him. That's so stupid.
Yeah, and I think it was actually in the Monday Night Wars.
Okay.
No. You're right about the Rise and Fall of WCW. He did mention that. But it was also in the Monday Night Wars like series that they did on the WWE Network, now Peacock, where, you know, when they did the episode on Jericho, Jericho pretty much was like, you know, he they like they went more in depth on the whole thing with Goldberg, and it was just like, and I think Goldberg even said he didn't see value in doing the storyline. It's like,
which doesn't make sense, because that would have been, in my opinion, that would have been the hottest thing. It was the hottest thing going. If Goldberg actually does business, they could have made million. They could have made tons of money off of that. They could have gone up and down, you know, all over the country, all around the circuit with that, and made a ton, and had probably the best story going in wrestling at the time.
Yep.
Potentially.
So real quick, please give us a spoiler-free version of the main event, please.
Okay, so I'm just going to tell you the main event was a 20-minute and 6-second War Games match, and it featured three teams. It was Team WCW. Each team had three members. So it was Team WCW, which was Diamond Dallas Page, Roddy Piper, and The Warrior, versus NWO Hollywood, which was Hollywood Hogan, Bret Hart, and Stevie Ray. And then it had Team NWO Wolfpack, which was Kevin Nash, Sting, and Lex Luger. And I'm not going to say who won. I'm not going to say anything that I remember about it, other than I believe this was the first time they had the three-team, three-participant team.
Because I'm reading the thing that says, for the first time in history, nine superstars duke it out in a no-holds-barred three-team brawl.
So I know a lot of people like that format. I'm very, like, I love War Games, and I love the traditional 5-on-5 War Game style.
Yeah.
But that's just me, though. But in order for that to work, you either have to have one faction going against one superstar, and he tries to bring in some buddies to help him, or you have to have two factions that are going against each other. In this situation,
it's like three factions.
Well, yeah, and this one, it kind of did make sense to have the three v three thing going on, but I don't remember actually whether or not I liked it or not. But I am very much a fan of the 5-on-5 traditional War Games match.
Right. So with that, everyone, if you want to watch it with us on YouTube, click the link in the article so you can go right to it. Please note, you will have ads both before and during the match, so we do apologize for that. And then if you have it on Peacock, just note that we are dealing with the ads on the YouTube side of things, so we apologize if you have to pause while we have to go through ads. So with that, we are going to start Team WCW versus NWO Hollywood versus NWO Wolfpack War Games of WCW Fall Brawl 98, which will run a total of 20 minutes and 21 seconds, which is what it is on the WWE's YouTube page, starting in 3, 2, 1. And remember, there's no entrances here. They're going right into the match.
Which actually I kind of like a little bit better, but that's just me.
And we're starting off with Bret Hart and DDP.
DDP. Maybe my favorite wrestler of all time, and my favorite guy from this era of WCW for sure. So two good competitors in the ring. By the way, I do have to ask you, Mike, what did you think of I meant to ask this earlier while we were going over the current events of wrestling, but what did you think of The Miz wrestler fighting an invisible man?
What can't Miz do?
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I wanted to get to. Soon, it hasn't happened yet, but soon, everyone who's a professional wrestling fan is going to realize how good and what a gem the Miz is, and there will be a huge public outcry of support for the Miz and love of the Miz, and I'm here for it, because I've been a huge Miz fan for years upon years. He's been one of my favorite guys in the business for probably about 10 years now. I love the Miz, and that was incredible.
Oh yeah, like Miz gets a lot of hate, and I think, but he's definitely earned the respect that he has. Because he is a hard worker.
Not enough yet. Like, I don't see. I feel like there's not enough people who respect the Miz yet.
No, that's fair.
And once it happens, I cannot wait to see the levels that they take the Miz to when it finally happens. Ooh, nice DDT.
Oh yeah.
God, Brett was so freaking good, man. Stupid Goldberg.
And the fact that, like, this is a match where, you know, this is the first Bret Hart match we've watched since Montreal Screwjob 97.
Yeah, you're correct. I mean, he did play a part in 97 Starcade, but I don't believe he had a match in that. I think he was
he was like the special enforcer or something. But no, I'm talking about, like, I don't think we've actually watched a Bret Hart match. And if we did, I don't remember it.
Yeah. But I mean, Bret is so freaking good, man. And to have DDP in there working with him, I mean, DDP was great too. Not on Bret's level great, but DDP was definitely very good. So to see these two working in the ring like this is great.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I miss the old top of the cage where it was so tall, or it was so low that if, like, an almost 7-footer tried to, like, lift somebody up, they hit the top, they hit the bottom of the cage. Or they hit the top of the cage, I mean.
Well, I remember an original, like, War Games match when it was like the Horsemen versus, like, Dusty and the Road Warriors.
Filming up for a
original. I'm talking about like Four Horsemen versus Dusty, the Road Warriors, and whatnot. And the Road Warriors did like their doomsday device on JJ Dillon and like fractured his shoulder because of like the cage ceiling was so low that they couldn't like properly hit the move on him. So when he fell back, he like ended up like separating his shoulder or something like that. So I was like, yeah, the I kind of like it better without the roof, with how they do it in WWE without the roof.
So at first I didn't like that because it didn't feel like War Games, but now that I see the way that they do it, I do like it.
And not only that, but they enforce the rule that if you escape the cage, it's considered a forfeit for your team.
Yeah.
Like blood and guts.
That's what I was worried about initially when I heard they were taking the top off. I was like, so wait, does that mean that now the rules of War Games change? But I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, like no, they didn't put in the fact that like if you climb out of the cage and like go out to the other side like you would in a cage match, it's considered a forfeit for your team.
What is cool about now them not having the top of the cage is it does make the cage a little more versatile. Like the guys can actually climb up on.
And we are in a break real quick. We do apologize.
And jump off and do some spots and everything. And so that does make it a little cooler, but you know.
Yep. All right. We got like 3 more seconds left of a break and then we're back at it and we're back at it. And that's bringing out Stevie Ray.
Oh, this is so stupid. I don't like this where the guys are backstage waiting. They should be around the cage. That's how that's stupid. I don't like that.
Well, that's how AEW did it with does it with Blood and Guts.
Well,
and have you watched any of the Blood and Guts matches that AEW has done?
Not really.
Okay.
But dude, the last time I really, really watched AEW was when we went to Full Gear.
Right. So what I'm going to recommend to you is this. I want you to just look up and see if they're on YouTube or something and look up the AEW Blood and Guts matches. Because they're essentially like War Games, but in my opinion, a little bit more bastardized. Because you're able to, because they bring the roof back. It's a little higher up than like what we're seeing here with WCW. And actually, let me full screen this for you because I just realized that I'm not doing that for you. and what's it called? They allow you to fight on top of the cage. They, you know, you're allowed to fight outside of the cage. It's almost like a death match in a way, rather than a war games match.
I'll check it out. I'm not a big fan of death matches, but I'll check it out.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of death matches either. Like, it's funny, last night on AEW Collision, they had Ricky Starks and Bryan Danielson in a Texas death match. And it wasn't really a death match. It was just like a lightened hardcore match. I think if Moxley was in the match, it would have been like a pure death match. But all right, who's this next person? Oh, it's Sting.
All right.
It's interesting. So Sting's actually at a convention this weekend, and he's doing the Wolfpack face paint for his appearances. For his
Oh,
appearance
nice.
this weekend.
Wait, we had two. That's kind of dumb. We had two NWO Hollywood members come out or in the match to go. That they should have had either Sting or Nash or Luger come out third.
God, that was rough.
That was awful. Yeah,
Well, one thing I
Sting
do
looks.
like that WWE does.
Sting looks a little heavy here, boys.
One thing I do like that WWE does with their War Games match that you notice that they're not doing with WCW is in between the two rings, the WWE puts in like a metal like grate there so they can easily walk both sides. You
Yeah.
know, from side to side. They don't have to worry about possibly falling in between the rings and stuff. It's also set up really nice face-offs too. Like when they do something like some of the 5-on-5 matches or 4v4 matches, like they've set off some really nice face-offs of the two sides, like Undisputed Era versus like I think it was like Team Ricochet or something like that. Like all 8 men were in the ring, and like one side of the ropes was like Undisputed Era, the other side was like Ricochet, the Viking Raiders, and I think like Pete Dunne. And then like they all just came in the middle between those ropes between the rings, and they just started brawling in between those ropes between the rings. It was like, oh my God, that looks so cool. You can't really do that with this one because they would just fall through the between the two rings.
Yeah. All right, here we go. We got 10 seconds to the next guy. Who do you think is going to be next? Is it going to be WCW or an NWO guy?
Probably an NWO guy. And we're in break, so we gotta wait like
So
20.
basically, what's going to happen with this nonsense is every time that the clock gets down to zero and we're about to get an entrance, a stupid commercial is going to come on.
Pretty much, yeah. So if you're watching on YouTube with
Damn it.
us, that's probably the way to go. And actually, this one we can skip, which I'm skipping now. So we're back at it. Oh, it's
Oh,
Piper.
we got Piper. All right. Here
Actually,
we
I'm not
go.
gonna lie. This is an environment for Piper.
Oh, yeah.
This is totally an environment for Piper. He just
Piper
did
just hit her own teammate.
DDT.
Piper just, he's literally fighting his teammate. What the hell?
I love this so much, bro.
What are you doing, Piper?
And now he's fighting Steve. Dude, I love Piper so much.
Piper doesn't give a shit.
I
She's gonna fuck up anybody.
love Piper so much. I
Oh,
really.
that's too funny. So here's my prediction, right? Luger's next. Then you're gonna get Nash after Luger. Then you get Warrior, then you get Hogan.
Probably.
That's my prediction. And keep in mind, I have not seen this, so I don't know that what. Oh, now they're still fighting each other and they're teammates. I love you, Piper.
Mean, in fairness, on that one, DDP instigated that one. Dude, but like, look at how Stevie Ray was just almost like dangling on top of the between the two rings. That's not comfortable.
No, that's an easy way to tear your knee up.
Or if your arm gets caught in there, mess up your shoulder.
Yep.
3, 2, 1. Commercial break. Oh, wait, no, we're not getting it this time. Woo! Yep. Oh, it's Luger. You called it.
I did call it. So now I'm thinking we go Nash, Warrior, Hogan after this.
When did Warrior debut?
I don't know, dude. I try to forget Warriors 1998 and WCW because it was awful. So what are they doing? 1:30 once the guys hit the ring?
Yeah, I think it was 5 minutes for the initial start and then 1:30.
Because originally it was 2 minutes. It was 5 and then every 2 minutes.
I think because this one is the first time with 3 teams of 3, they modified it.
Yeah, but it does make sense doing it every 1:30. See, is Piper going to go after Luger too?
Yeah, because...
Yep. Luger's not on his team, that's right.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if Warrior comes out and Piper starts fighting Warrior.
I'm sure he will. Dude, that was so funny when he just ran over and fucking kicked Edie.
He just comes up and just sucker punches DDP, who's just sitting in the corner. Like, I know you're my teammate, but I'm still punching you in the face.
Oh, that was too funny. Hey, we got 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's see if I was right.
No commercial. Oh no, we got a commercial, son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch. Damn you, YouTube. For those who don't see it, I'm shaking my fist at YouTube.
I'm just hoping that the next one. Oh good, I can skip this commercial in like 3 seconds, so. Alright, we're back. And who is it? Nash.
I called the order.
No, I want to throw something out there. I'm going to do a switch. I'm going to do Hogan followed by Warrior because if this is when Warrior debuted, it makes sense to have Warrior last.
Yeah, I don't think it was, though. Let me look that up real quick.
Oh, Hogan just appeared.
I guess Hogan will be.
Yeah, with a minute 20 left, Hogan appears already and enters the ring early.
So Warrior debuted in May of 98.
Okay, so he's already been there for a few months already.
Yeah.
And Hogan just took out Nash and Piper with, like, what's, I guess, a lead pipe? Because, like, there's still a minute left.
So then did they just let Warrior come down early? That's kind of what I hope.
I guess Warrior comes out now.
Oh, he had a slapjack or what? He had and Stevie Ray's slapjack or whatever the shit that thing was.
So wait, what team was Bret Hart on?
Bret Hart is on Hollywood.
So why the fuck did Stevie Ray just take out Bret Hart?
Because this is WCW back in the 90s. Nobody knows what the fuck's going on.
Well, you can't go for a pinfall until all the men are in the ring. Because the rule of War Games is that War Games does not officially begin until all men are in the ring.
Yeah.
So that comment right there is like, oh, well, you know, no wonder Stevie Ray didn't go for the pin. Yeah, because he can't. You have to wait for the last guy to come out. Oh, look, it's Lil Nate in the ring.
All right, here's our countdown clock to officially, finally.
Oh, yeah, and here's their countdown clock for the last member, which is going to be Warrior. So is everyone just going to stay, like, dead in the ring for a minute?
Probably. Oh, fuck me.
What the fuck is this shit? Maybe not have your back to Hogan.
What the fuck is going on?
Where the fuck did he come? Oh, that's probably why they also don't have a thing in the middle of the ring, in between the two rings. That because that's how a Warrior was getting in. Warrior's coming, but commercial break for like another second, and we're back.
That must not have been the real Warrior. That must not have been Warrior then in the ring. It must have been some other.
Yeah, it must have. Bro. It must have been like a.
Oh, you know who it was? Remember, didn't he have the disciple for the One Warrior Nation?
I don't know. I didn't watch WCW.
Yeah, so there was a guy. So he had this thing called the One Warrior Nation, which was OWN, reverse of NWO. And there was Ed Leslie became the disciple of the One Warrior Nation. And that's probably who that was. No, because there's Ed Leslie right there.
So wait a minute. He just pulled Hogan out of the match and they're locking up the cage.
What the fuck is going on? Is everybody still dead in the other ring?
Yes. Well, no, Bret Hart's up now. Wait, it wasn't even the War Games matches. It was like once everyone got in the ring, if you left the ring, it was like a forfeit or something. Who the fuck's between the two rings? Is that Piper?
I have no idea what the fuck is going on.
I don't see Piper, so I think Piper's between the two rings.
Like, and them locking him in the cage doesn't make any sense because it's not him locked in the cage with a bunch of with all only NWO guys. It's like he got allies in the ring.
And here's the thing. The winner of this match, you know, like the team that wins gets like a number one contendership for the title.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And now there's cops trying to break him up for two guys who are in this match?
Wait, what the fuck is going on? This is the worst shit I've ever seen in my life.
No wonder I didn't watch WCW.
God, WCW was so shit.
So, Stevie Ray does not even touch Bret Hart. And yet somehow hits Bret Hart. Well, that's over.
That was fucking awful. That was so shit.
Today's pain was brought to you by fucking ouch.
What the actual fuck?
That hurt. And I should note that the world heavyweight title was not on the line on this card.
Who was the champ at that point?
I think it was Goldberg. Because Paige then earned the shot at the WCW World Heavyweight Championship at Halloween Havoc. And I think this is the time when Goldberg is still champion.
Gotcha. I'm writing in my notes. 1998 War Games worst match ever, and I just highlighted it seven times.
All right, so coming up next, we're going to be watching the main event of WWF Breakdown in Your House from 1998. I'm going to skip the... Actually, no, I'll do the Sunday Night Heat match. Why not? So you have three Sunday Night Heat matches. All of them were like between 2 to 3.5 minutes long. I'm not going to really go over times. You have Golga with Giant Silva, Corrigan, and Luna Vachon defeating Mosh with Thrasher in a singles match. You had the Hardy Boys of Matt and Jeff Hardy defeating Kai and Tai of Funaki and Men's Teo with Yamaguchi-san. And you had 8-Ball with Paul Ellering defeating Billy Gunn with and Skull with Paul Ellering. Wait, what? This is a triple threat match of 8-Ball defeating Billy Gunn and Skull. And Paul Ellering accompanied both 8-Ball and Skull to the ring. I am... What? But hey, the Hardy Boys. Then to open up the main card, you had Owen Hart defeating Edge in a singles match. You had Al Snow and Scorpio with Head defeating Too Much of Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor in tag team action. Mark Miro with Jacqueline defeated Draws in singles action. Bradshaw defeated Vader in a Falls Count Anywhere match. D'Lo Brown defeated Gangrel in singles competition. The Rock defeated Ken Shamrock and Mankind in a triple threat steel cage match to determine the number one contender to the WWE title in what would be the second longest match of the night at 18:47. Val Venus with Terry Runnels would defeat Dustin Runnels in a singles match. And then D-Generation X, consisting of Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, and X-Pac, would defeat Jeff Jarrett and Southern Justice of Dennis Knight and Mark Canterbury in a six-man tag match, which would then bring you to our main event of Kane versus The Undertaker versus Stone Cold Steve Austin in a triple threat match for the WWF title, where The Undertaker and Kane are barred from pinning each other. If anyone had interfered on Austin's behalf, Austin would have immediately been stripped of the title.
This was when McMahon was trying to fuck Austin bad.
Pretty much. So with that said, we are watching this on the Internet Archive website, which is archive.org, because they have the full DVD of Breakdown in Your House 1998 on the website. Thank you, Internet Archive. We love you. So we're going to have you go to number 9, which is VTS 017, which is for 20 minutes and 51 seconds. And then we're going to have you end up clicking on VTS 018 for 7 minutes 14 seconds, as that is going to be the finalization of the match. So with that, we are going to begin in 3, 2, 1. Lower the volume for reasons.
Can you, there we go.
Yep. So we're seeing the little bit of the end piece of what was shown on Sunday Night Heat, and now we're getting the entrances. Actually, I'm not going to lie. If I could find everything on Internet Archive, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
Doubt it, but it would be cool. Not gonna lie, Kane actually really does look badass still.
Yeah. This was back before they started messing with his character or something.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily messing with the character, but they had to evolve the character. I mean, he couldn't, you couldn't stay a mute forever. You couldn't stay, you had to be able to talk eventually. You had to bring some more depth to the character. I mean, yeah, there are iterations of his character that were like, eh. But I mean, that also is what happens when you have like a 20 plus year career as a character. Kane, you're not facing the hard cam. Kane, hold on. Oh no, you're supposed to face. Well, shit. He did it well without facing the hard cam. That idiot. Come on, Kane. You know better. Hard cam. Gotta face it. Kane can raise the Titanic. Oh, dude, we're finally getting like the Ministry music. I'm not gonna lie, this music actually hits pretty hard for Taker. Man, look at the people with the laser pointers. What dicks? Oh, Matt, you still there? All right, okay. I mean, this is a smart way to start a match, actually. Especially if you're Austin, knowing that, Kane and Taker are not allowed to pin each other, and if anyone helps Austin, he gets stripped of the title. So this is a smart move by Austin to start the match. Can't say the same for whatever the fuck happened in the that War Games match we watched.
Sorry, I was just doing a little bit of I had some work stuff I had to check up on real quick.
No, you're good. I'm actually so hilariously, everyone. I actually had to do work this weekend, which is why we didn't record on a normal Saturday. We were recording on a Sunday. And well, you all had to work too, but like it's much more rare for me to work on a Saturday. Because my job, my company's only open Monday through Friday. Because we work in conjunction with the federal government. And so like two of my coworkers are over at at the office right now overseeing something, and I actually have to order them lunch. So I'm in a text chat with them right now, trying to like figure out what they want for lunch so I can order it so it can go on a company card. So I'm also doing my job right now. And there's a stunner right there.
So wait, I thought this was a triple threat match, isn't it?
It is a triple threat match, and Taker just pulled out Kane. Or pulled out Austin, I mean.
But really what it is a handicap match.
Ultimately, yes. Like, the interesting thing about this match, it's like, Kane and Taker can technically fight each other. They just can't pin each other. Nice neck breaker. These fans just keep touching Kane every time he gets knocked out of the ring. You know, it's actually interesting. You know, we're seeing them do the choking with the cables right now. So it's very interesting when you watch Austin go to choke out Kane. Kane instantly gets his hands in between the cables. Obviously, Austin can't because he's choking out Kane on this one. But last night in the death match between Starks and Brian. And even actually when they had their strap match at All Out, Bryan Danielson would actually get his hands in there when a chain was there or a strap was there to kind of like make sure he doesn't get fully choked out. Ricky Starks will just let Bryan Danielson choke the shit out of him, which I don't think is a very smart thing to do.
No, not at all.
I mean, I'm going to admit this match isn't bad. I mean, I understand it's a little slower moving because of the fact that, you know, it's you know, it's essentially, like, as you mentioned, like, it's essentially a handicap match, even though it's really a triple threat.
Yeah.
But at least it's helping, like, especially with the way commentary is, it's at least helping progress the story. Like, that's the point of this. It's not like the main event of what we just watched for WCW, where it's like, what the fuck's going on? Why is Roddy Piper beating the shit out of his own teammate? Speaking of that, where did Roddy Piper go when the smoke came out? Man, it's nice not having commercial breaks.
Yeah.
You got Slaughter, Patterson, and Briscoe.
All trying, I guess, make sure nobody interferes on Austin's behalf.
Or just taking in the beating that Austin's taking in general.
Yeah. Now, I don't remember. Is this for the WWE Championship, or is this
for... Yeah, this is for the title. Because unlike WCW... WWE put their title on the line on their pay-per-view main event.
Yeah.
Man, if only they could have a grave there where they're fighting right now. That would make this battle a little bit more epic.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That looks like where they moved the fans way back. And they're fighting because, like, there's all kinds of trash on the floor right there. Austin is,
well, they just said it's particle board covering the ice of the... because obviously this is around the time when they're prepping for the new NHL season. They're probably getting into training camp.
I would hate it every time you went near the fans, get touched like that.
Austin just going right for Briscoe. That was actually, I'm not going to lie, that was actually pretty funny seeing Austin just go right after Briscoe like that.
Yeah.
What's Kane going to do to Briscoe? Dude, I would love to see Kane just destroy Briscoe. Did Kane just yeet Briscoe into the entrance?
Who do you think was more badass back then, Taker or Kane?
Who was more badass?
Yeah.
See, the problem is I can't really say because I didn't start watching until like late 2000.
Oh.
So by then, like, Taker's already American badass, and Kane is, you know, he's obviously not, he's wearing more of the singlet version of his attires rather than this version.
This was my favorite version of Kane.
I mean, I like the Kane, the version of Kane when he won the tag titles with the Hurricane. Like, I like that version of Kane too.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't say I didn't like the other versions. I just said this is my favorite version.
Yeah. I mean, but for me, it's really hard to say just simply for the fact that, you know, I wasn't watching around this time, you know, in 98.
Yeah. Oh, boy. This is such a better match than what we just had to deal with.
Well, I think it's also just because the fact that there's better storytelling being told in this. Whereas, like, I'm not saying that you can't have good storytelling in a War Games match, but when you had that type of War Games match where the creative kind of just sucks, you're not going to have effective storytelling of what you're trying to push, right? Well,
that's exactly it. I mean, you know, in 1998, the writing was a million times better for WWE than it was for WCW.
Yep. So, I mean,
that was a garbage match. And then now, could you imagine having paid money to watch that crap?
Yeah. See, I love these little spurts from Austin. Where it's like, you know, he's getting pounded on, you know, the odds are against him, but he finds those like little moments, like I really love how he, like, the moments are hitting at the right time too in the match. Like when Austin gets those little spurts.
Yeah.
Like that's the other thing. The pacing is so much better in this match.
Well, I mean, I think that overall, the talent is better. The selling is better.
Well, see, here's the thing, though. Like, when you look at some of the talent that was in the match for WCW, you had DDP, great wrestler.
Yeah.
You had Bret Hart, spectacular wrestler. You had Roddy Piper. Wonderful brawler, great character. You had Stevie Ray, probably a better tag wrestler than an actual.
Oh, 100%. Stevie Ray sucks. I don't even know why he was in that match.
Lex Luger, I would actually say he's a pretty good average wrestler for a big guy.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Sting, not a bad, you know, again, another good, solid guy. So, like, you, Warrior is, well, sucks. Hogan, never gave a shit about Hogan. And then Kevin Nash. I really don't have anything negative to say about Nash. Like, he's a good big man. Like, I think the only person who was really out of place in that match was Stevie Ray.
Yeah, 100%.
But I think when you take those guys, you had really good wrestlers in that match. But when you have a story that just doesn't, you know, you don't have a story to go into it, and it just doesn't make sense outside of, oh, this is what you're fighting for. It's like almost like, well, why didn't they just have a 9 men enter War Games and just, instead of it being teams, just be 9 individuals going in fighting for a, you know, a title. Yeah, for a content for the, to become number one contender.
Yeah.
So it's like there's just more logic. Now, like right here. Now, obviously, Kane and Taker can't pin each other, but they both want the title. And they both have gone for pin attempts on Austin, only to have their pin attempts, you know, disrupted by the other. So now they're fighting each other. And so it's like, okay, now we're adding more to this story. And now we have Kane and Austin working together. Like, just what you're getting right here just works so much better from a storytelling perspective.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 100%.
But, like, that's the thing. It's like, I don't think it's the wrestlers when it came to WCW for that main event. I think it just came with how the creative was done for it.
And that whole Warrior coming in and then getting beat up and then all of a sudden the smoke goes up again and the warrior comes running out. Like, what the hell was that?
Watch it be really Eddie Dennis, and then he just kind of popped up out of nowhere. Like, he was already in the NWO gear, and he was doing the chest pounding for it, and then... Oh, wow. It actually transitioned already to the second part of the video, so you don't have to do any Eddie transitions yourselves. That's nice. I like that.
Trying to look up while this is going on to see who that fake warrior was.
It was a dingo.
Yeah. Okay, so do you remember? You probably don't know this, but do you know who the Renegade was?
Nope.
Okay, so the Renegade in the early and mid 90s was basically the WCW's version of the Ultimate Warrior. You know, he wore like the really colorful singlet and ran down to the ring, or didn't necessarily run to the ring, but he had his face painted. So he was the guy who played the Renegade was.
The fake one.
Yeah, it was the fake warrior.
All right.
He does kind of look like him, too. I'm just looking at him again now. He does kind of resemble the Ultimate Warrior. He's a lot smaller physically, like he's not as yoked as the warrior, but. They had a jacket on him, so I guess that doesn't really affect. Oh man, Richard Wilson, the guy who played the Renegade, passed away a few months after the fall brawl. He passed away in February of 99.
Oof, that's rough.
Yeah. It looks like he might have been self-inflicted. This is actually a really good match. I'm liking the way that this is all tied. Yeah, and what's cool, what's great about this is this tie, this flows into what we had going on at the time was, you know, McMahon using, you know, McMahon basically trying to destroy Steve Austin and using other wrestlers as. Okay, that's a little weird.
Yeah, that's right. This was the one where they did the double pin.
I'd like to know how they resolve this.
It's Batman.
Oh, old Patty P. Now, see, you would figure that Taker and Kane would get pissed off too and start attacking people. Because essentially, they both just got screwed out of a world title.
Good night, everybody. All right, let me get out of this real quick. Whatever the hell I'm in. There we go. Sorry, give me a moment. I gotta try to write my coworker's lunch order. So yeah, that was a breakdown in your house, main event. Good main event. We obviously you could tell we liked that a lot better than the other shit.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. Any closing thoughts, Matthew?
No, not really. I mean, this is where it's starting to get clear that WCW was way better than WCW at this point. I mean, it's 1998. Is when you really started to see it, but now it's like just blatantly obvious that the top of the two companies is clearly WWE. Like just even the like matches that I thought, oh man, that's kind of a sucky match for this pay-per-view or for a pay-per-view, were still better than all of the matches on a major WCW show like Fall Brawl.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And one thing is that like I kind of wish maybe we had instituted WCW a little earlier on, in things, so we can do better comparisons between the two.
Yeah.
But like I think with what happened earlier this month when we tried doing SummerSlam and the other WCW pay-per-view, and then obviously today with Fall Brawl and Breakdown, we can, we're obviously seeing like a difference between main events and how the main events are presented to us and the quality of the matches themselves and stuff like that. So it's definitely noticeable right now with the way how we're kind of doing it right now.
Yeah.
So with that, Matt, where can the people find you on social media?
Really, the only one that I use constantly and check constantly is my Instagram. You can find me there at the coolest fat kid on the gram. And yeah, that's pretty much it at this time.
Yep. And then you can find Ben, who is, as we mentioned the last episode, is out on medical leave to allow his vocal cords to properly heal up. You can find Ben on Twitter at BobTGoldfish. Twitch doing the gaming thing with our buddy Jordan and his wife, Amy, at twitch.tv/321_TV. Obviously, Ben and I do Voices from the Grid together, which you can find on Twitter at VFTG_PR. Click the Linktree link to find out where you can listen to the show and go to the website and all that other cool jazz for VFTG. And then, of course, for me, you can find me on Twitter at TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions, Twitch at Twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75, and which ironically, I am playing NHL 98 on PlayStation 1. Everything is obviously on the website at TXHTHockey.com/X75Productions for everything that is VFTG, Awesome Mania, and anything else that isn't hockey related. So with that, I can't do what Ben does, so I'm not going to try to do what Ben does. But until next time, everyone, we will see you ringside.
Later.